I'll never forget when I was in high school, one of my friends, his dad, told me a story of I thought what would have been an absolute killer prank. His dad had a brother who was a couple years younger than him, and he was in college at the time, and his brother was in high school, and he smarted off to him. I forget what he said exactly, but he did something to tick off his older brother. And as the older brothers have a tendency to do when that happens, they decide that they're going to get even. Well, it just so happened that his little brother was going to go out on a date. And he knew that his brother had to go to the movie and had a little bit of time between the movie and his date's curfew. He also knew that his brother had a tendency to hang out in a certain spot about a half mile or a mile from his girlfriend's house where they would kiss a little bit before curfew kind of happens. And so he decided that he and his friend would get some carjacks and teach his brother a lesson. They were all kind of stealth and ninja, and as the windows were a little fogged and his brother was a little preoccupied, they snuck up behind the car, each having their own jack handle, and timed it just perfectly so that they raised the rear axle of his car. It's a rear-wheel drive car. And so he lifted it just high enough that it was about 4 inches off the ground so that neither tire could actually get any traction. And then, of course, what good brothers do, he waited till about 5 minutes before curfew, and he got back to his car, honked the horn, stopped there, held the jack handles to show that there's no way for him to get the car down, and took off. His brother frantically just started up, and just heard the whing of the wheels spinning in the air. He jumped out, mad, angry, and there he was, stuck. Now, this is before the days of cell phones and backcountry roads, and his brother desperately needed help from someone, and he needed to walk a mile and explain to his girlfriend's dad, one, why she was late, and what they were doing in the car. Kind of stuck it to him. Thought that would be a pretty fun prank to pull. But I want to ask you a question. When's the last time that you realized that you were stuck? Maybe not like cars spinning wheels stuck, but like stuck in life or stuck in a really difficult situation. When was that time when you felt like you were really dependent on others, that you knew you couldn't do this on your own? Maybe it's you're fixing something on your house and you realize, man, this is above my own expertise, and you just felt overwhelmed. Maybe you traveled to a new place and you got completely lost and you're trying to find your way. Maybe you're facing some really difficult health challenges and you realize, man, I don't know if I can get through this and I'm going to have to depend on others. The reality is we can face it in relational conflict where it seems almost hopeless and helpless, and we can wonder, how are we ever going to get through this? It can feel like we're just spinning our wheels. Well, the reason why I tell you this story and I ask you these questions to get you to think about this is today we're starting a sermon series on the Psalms of the Ascent. And in Psalm 121 is the one that we're going to focus on. And we're hearing from a psalmist who's stuck, who feels that sense of helplessness. And he gives us some advice on what we can do when we face these situations. So if you want to turn with me to Psalm 121 on page 432, I think is what it is in your Bibles. It's a familiar song, a psalm. We actually could have sung it today, but we figured we would just hear it. And so it's a song that you will probably recognize as you hear it. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber indeed. He who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm, and he will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and your going, both now and forevermore. As I said, over the course of the next couple of weeks, from now until our fall kind of kickoff, we're going to be going through the Psalms of Ascent. You may have noticed in your Bible when you saw this that the Psalms of Ascent are from Psalms 120 all the way to 134. And it's a section of Psalms that is traditionally thought of that the pilgrims who went from their homeland scattered throughout the hillside and throughout the nations would sing and pray to themselves as they made the pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And in that, they have songs and meanings that teach them a lot about life and the struggles that we sometimes face. And so we're going to be spending some time in these. These were songs that they would sing three times a year as they would make the pilgrimages to the different feasts and festivals that were held in Jerusalem. And so they had a deep place in their heart. If these were hymns or songs, these would be some of their top 10 favorites or top 15 favorites. And so some of them have a huge meaning for us. And this, I think, might be one of them. I don't know what you thought of when you heard these opening lines, "I lift my eyes to the hill," but usually for me, when I think of this, I kind of think of the hikes I've done in Mount Hood or Mount Baker, and I think of a psalmist sitting out on the hills and looking at the hills and going, I'm looking at the hills and looking at God's grandeur and realizing that this is where my help come from. But the reality is this isn't the image or the idea that the psalmist wants to communicate in this opening verse. We know it because he admits and recognizes that he's in danger, that danger surrounds him and he was helpless. We know this from the second part of the verse where it says, "Where does my help come from?" When he's looking at the hills, he's not just looking at the grandeur of them and the beauty around them. Rather, what he's noticing and what he's seeing is the danger that exists. And the danger is real. If you read the psalm, it talks about his foot slipping and he could face bodily danger. We sometimes forget that when the pilgrims were making this trek, they didn't have the great road system. Yeah, the Romans were working on it, but they literally were walking through mountains and wilderness and deserts on trails. And there was a real physical danger to go through these things. And so when the psalmist says, "I lift my eyes to the hills, where does my help come from?" He says, "I recognize that there's a danger there. There's a sense of helplessness and fear. There is dangers from others as well." The reality is that robbers knew that the Jews would go through these festivals every three times a year. And so they would be prepared to ambush on the trails. And there was a real danger from the hills that these people could be trying to get them and stick it to them. That's why when he says, "I look to the hills, where does my help come from?" He has this in mind. But we know that there's an even greater danger that the hills represent for the psalmist, and that is, one, a spiritual apostasy. You see, Jeremiah 3:23 makes it absolutely clear that on the hills and the mountains surrounding Jerusalem were altars to other idols. You see, Israel was at times really faithful to the God, the creator of the universe. But then when times got hard and it seemed like God was distant, a lot of times they would kind of subside and they'd go away and they would put their trust in these other idols and deities around them. And so they would create these altars on the hills. And so when the psalmist looked to the hills and he saw the danger, he realized how easy it was for him to not really trust God, but to trust these other deities instead. Jeremiah 3:23 said, "Surely the adulterous commotion on the hills and the mountains is a deception, and surely in the Lord our God is the salvation of Israel." So we see that there's these idols all around. And so when the psalmist cries out that "I look to the hills," it's not of grandeur and beauty, but rather realizing that he's got danger and helplessness is in his life. He realizes that the potential to spin his wheels is great and that life may overtake him. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't often like to think that I'm stuck or that I'm helpless. But the reality is, for me, the more that I live, the more that I realize exactly how helpless I really am and how much I am dependent on other people and God for my subsistence. You know, the reality is that you and I are just as helpless. We face the danger of physical harm. Maybe some of you guys coming here today have faced that. For us, Stephanie and I, I've told you, we have had two babies who are in our circle of friends that are hanging on for dear life. And we forget how fragile life really is and how we just assume that they're going to have their baby and everything's going to turn out okay. But we've been reminded this week that that's not always the case. Some of you have had to deal with cancer diagnosis or even just realize that you're getting old and you've had to deal with those aches and bones of old age. The reality is you and I face physical harm each and every day. We don't like to think about it, but the potential for threats is there. We also face a danger from others. We would like to think that people will always have our best intentions for us, but we may have that coworker who wants to stick it to us and just be a jerk. We can get into relational strife with our roommates or with our spouses or with our kids, and it doesn't feel like they're there to support us or be there for us. They can feel like they're a danger to us. They're hurting us, and they can make us feel helpless as we deal with these difficult situations. Maybe you've realized that this week, that maybe life is a little bit more fragile and helpless than what you would like to think. But we also face the same danger that the Israelites did, that the pilgrim did on his journey. We face the danger of spiritual apostasy or putting our trust in other things. We may not bow down to idols, but we can put our confidence in other things. We can say that we trust that God is enough, but when we have that unexpected bill and our bank account gets depleted, it can send us into a shockwave because we value our bank account and we're stressed when it doesn't happen. We can value control in our lives, and so when anything happens that upsets that, when it seems like life isn't going the way we expected, it can make us wonder. It can make us feel helpless. We can get stressed about all kinds of things. We may not call it helplessness and fear, but I dare bet that deep down inside, if we look at the things that cause us anger and stress in our lives, underneath the surface is this feeling that certain things are outside of our control, that certain things didn't go the way we expected, and we can feel helpless and afraid more than we like to admit. What I love about this psalm is that the psalmist is so honest about a situation. In one line he says, "I look to the hills, and where does my help come from?" And in the absolute next verse, we see that he gives this statement of faith. He recognizes that he's in a situation that seems outside of his control. That's bigger and greater than anything he can comprehend. And you can hear him say to himself, "I know all this danger is around me, but I'm going to trust in God, the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth." And when he says that, he says, "I'm going to believe in the God, the one God, the God of Israel, the God of my ancestors. And I'm going to trust that he can provide me with what I need." When we face helplessness, I need us to recognize, this psalm challenges us to recognize, that it presents us with a decision. Who or what are we going to depend on? Are we going to depend on ourselves or our circumstances or other people or our health? Or are we going to trust in God? We don't always think of it that way. We can just let the stress of our lives kind of overconsume us and overtake us. But the reality is, anytime we feel that helplessness, it's a decision. And I think it's important for us today to recognize that. That we have the same decision that the psalmist did. To either trust and be fearful, trust other things and be fearful, or to trust God. And that challenge is before us all the time. The other thing I want us to know about this is that our helplessness presents us with an opportunity to grow in our faith in God's care for us. I don't like to think of it this way. We talked a lot about suffering and some of the potential purposes a few months ago. But the reality is, every time we recognize our own helplessness and our lack of being able to do it ourselves, it presents us with an opportunity for growth. an opportunity to trust that, yes, God is enough, even when my health is failing, or my bank account takes a hit, or I face an uncertain future. And that's a pretty important thing for us to think about, for us to realize that the feeling of stress and helplessness doesn't have to defeat us, but rather God can work through it to help us grow. And if you look at the psalm kind of takes an abrupt change in the next spot. The first two verses are all about me, and then in verse 3, it talks about you and third person pronouns. Now, when I was in high school, you may not know it, but I liked to act, and I acted in a couple of different plays. And as I thought about this psalm, I thought about the time when I was in the musical Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. You've seen the movie. It's classic. I grew up in Iowa. It's classic kind of bumbling, you know, redneck humor is what it is. And it went over great in my small town. And I learned in that time that I could actually sing, okay? I had never been in choir before. I was in band. I played the trombone. And I had loved to act, and I had acted the year before. And so when the musical came out, I thought, well, I'll just try out for it. Well, I got a part, and I was given a solo, okay? A 2 or 3 line solo. Pretty nerve-wracking. What I didn't realize is that in my tryout, I almost didn't even get the chance to sing that solo. You see, the thing about me is I learn a song by ear, and I only had 2 people to sing that song before me, and my tryout was so bad that I literally hit 2 right notes in a whole song. And the music director told the drama director, there is no way we can let this guy sing. The drama director said, we just need him for his acting, okay? I pray that you just let him be the actor and he can mouth watermelon as he sings if it's really that bad. And in this song, we'll let the other brother sing his 2-line solo, because it was one of those songs where the brothers were talking about how they were going to go get their wives and bring them back. And so one brother would sing, and then all the 7 brothers would come around and say, yeah, you're right, that's what we're going to do. And so they thought, hey, we'll just let some other brother fill in, and little Benjamin can go, Brad can sit in the back and just go watermelon, 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 and not sing at all, because it would be that bad. Well, it turned out I can sing, and I figured it all out. But the reason why I bring that up is because that's really the image that we need to have in this song. We need to have this image of a person singing. The psalmist acknowledging all his hurt and his brokenness. If this was a musical theater, that's what it would be. He would be looking out on the hills, talking about how hard stuff is. And then he would say, I'm putting my trust in God. But then there's this choir of other pilgrims around that sing from verse 3 through 8 that say, look, there's reasons why you should put your trust in God when you feel helpless. And they sing in that kind of spot. And they highlight 3 different aspects of God that should give us reassurance that we can put confidence in Him when we feel helpless, when we feel alone. And the first one is that God's care is constant. If you see in verse 3, he says, He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber indeed. He who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. See, the psalmist knows his fear. And his biggest fear is that somehow he will be outside of God's plan for his life. That somehow God will kind of be so preoccupied with other things or sleeping on the job that he won't care about him. And the choir of the pilgrims want to sing to him and say, look, God is constantly watching you. You can put your trust in him because he cares for you constantly. He's not a God who falls asleep, like the deities were charged in other parts of the Bible, of Baal when he wouldn't do the altar, and said he's constantly awake and he's constantly actively involved. He says he cares for Israel, the nation, all around you. And you don't have to fear because God's care is constant. Now, they hit this aspect of Israel. And if the psalmist is there, he may think, well, this is great. I mean, God is watching us. But is he watching us from a distance, like the old Bette Midler song from the 1990s? Or is it more intimate? I mean, does he just care about big groups of people, like the people of God, the Israel, or does he actually care for me? And that's the second stanza of this thing, of the psalm, the second kind of reason that the chorus gives to the psalmist of why they could trust God. It's that God's care is close. He says, God watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand, not from a distance. God's watching you. His presence is right there, right now. The sun will not harm you by day and the moon will not harm you by night. And we need to recognize that these are real dangers that these people face. Today I met my neighbor, this week I met my neighbor a couple of doors down, and I made the mistake of wearing a black t-shirt in the sun. Nothing's worse than sitting in the sun with a black t-shirt trying to carry on a conversation. And I just remember feeling completely like getting that, kind of feeling the heat kind of get to me, and I needed to find the shade. Thankfully, I got a tree 2 feet away, and I finally just made the decision, I'm going to step in the shade. It's going to give me the relief. And what the psalmist wants his people, or what the chorus wants the psalmist to know, is that God's going to give that protection that they need from the sun through the scorching desert, that God will provide, that he is close. That it doesn't just matter about the big things, but he cares for him and his needs as well. But there's another thing that this last line, the sun and the moon, communicate, and that the rest of the psalm communicates as well, and that is that God's care is comprehensive. See, the psalmists like to talk in extremes. So when the psalmist says it's the sun and the moon, that's everything. That's the all parts of the day. It's the day and the night. But in case we are dense and we didn't get it, they sing to the psalmist, the chorus sings to the psalmist, that the Lord will keep you from all harm and he'll watch over your life. That the Lord will watch over your coming and your going, both now and forevermore. And the image that the choir wants the psalmist to hear, and that the psalmist wants us to hear as well, is that God doesn't just watch over us, but he watches us closely. And then he has all aspects of our life under his care and under his plan. And as we said, I know that when we hear this, depending on the situation that we're in, sometimes it can feel like that's not the way God is. Like, why did God allow this bad thing to happen to me? I mean, really, if God's really caring for me, then why did I get sick? Or why is my relationship in strife? And we can think that because bad things happen and because we suffer, that God isn't on our side or he's not caring for us. But we need to balance it to see that the psalmist is communicating to us that nothing is outside of God's plan. And as we heard over and over again from the suffering series, that God can use all things for our ultimate good. And we need to trust that that's the case. This is found throughout the Bible. I mean, Psalm 23 talks about the good shepherd. Where does the good shepherd lead? In green pastures where everything's great, and he leads equally through the valley of the shadow of death, right? God's presence, his working in our lives, is in both. And Romans 8, verse 28 says that we know that in all things, God works for good for those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. And that's the truth that the psalmist wants us to hear. But in those times when we feel helpless, when we recognize our own frailty, that we face a decision. Are we going to trust ourselves in our own judgment? Are we going to trust what we think the way things should be? Or are we going to trust that there's a God who is watching over us, who is close, and who cares for us comprehensively, and trust his plan? That's the challenge of this psalm. See, Psalm 21 encourages us to not be unaware of our own helplessness and look beyond the hills. As I said, I think actually becoming, kind of alluded to in the beginning, being aware of our helplessness actually is a sign of maturity. Because we realize really how frail our lives are. We're not in this kind of idealistic view. But it also makes us more aware of how much we really need to be dependent on God for everything. So when you're frustrated with people and your relationships feel helpless and hopeless, don't ignore that sense, but rather recognize the helplessness you feel. Admit it. Say, God, this is hard and this is overwhelming. I need your help. I need your grace. I need your mercy. I need to feel your presence because it seems like all my relationships around me are failing. And ask God to work. Ask Him to point out your own sins rather than judging the sins of others. And to focus on that rather than the harm that they cause. And ask God to help you to be gracious to one another. When challenges come at work or family or kids that stress you out, don't try to pretend like you got it all figured out, like, I can just deal with this, or pretend it doesn't stress you out at all. But rather admit, this life is really hard. I don't know how my kids are going to turn out. They're driving me nuts right now. And marriage is awesome, but it has tough spots. And work is great, but it isn't the ultimate thing for me. And I need your help, God. I need you to give me the strength to get through this day, this hour, this minute. And be honest about that. Recognize your helplessness and look to God and ask Him for His help. And state that trust. God, I'm going to trust that what you have is enough. And remind yourself of the assurances that the choir gives. That He cares for you, that He's close, that His care is constant, and that's comprehensive. And when life is going good, you know, those times when we tend to look around and say, hey, look, man, everything's going the way it is. Recognize that everything there is a gift from God, and that even our success doesn't make us bulletproof. And thank God, and say, God, thank you for what you've given me. Thank you for the family that you've provided, for the job, for the success that I'm having, rather than taking credit for ourselves. And when we doubt about whether or not our faith in God is enough, when we feel our brokenness and our sin, recognize that our brokenness is exactly the state that we need to come to God. And look to God and look to what Christ did on the cross and trust that His death and our faith in it is enough. That it's close, it's comprehensive, and it shows that God cares more about us than we could ever imagine. Trust that His love and His grace is enough to get us through the trials and the tribulations and the sense of helplessness that we have. That's what Psalm 121 challenges us to do today. Let's pray. Dear gracious God, we thank you for the opportunity that we have to worship you. We thank you that we can worship you even when times are good, and that we can come to you even when times are bad. That even in those difficult situations where it feels like maybe you're not watching over us, or you're not close, or you don't have a plan for our lives, that you're still working there beside us. Your presence is there with us. And I pray that we can recognize our helplessness and our brokenness, and that you can help us to not turn to our own thing, our own ideas, but to trust in you, the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth. And Lord, I pray that throughout this week that you just help us to recognize our helplessness and to look up and to turn our affections and our attention to you. We ask this all in your name. Amen.